Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
This book is heavily written around suicide, so please use that for your trigger warnings. There's mentions of suicide, suicidal thoughts, and actions occurred in this book.
And explicit sexual content.
And explicit sexual content.
I was like, where's the good stuff?
I almost forgot about that because
I know.
It's sad for a second.
And we got a review, y'all.
Yay!
I don't know why I said y'all. I'm from Nevada. And this is from Heated Over Random Internet Shit.
Yeah, same.
Quite the name.
Yeah.
And it says, warning. Also, this one scared me at first because it starts with do not listen. And I was like, hey, girl, that's rude.
Whoa, pipe it
but
down.
But it's nice. It says, do not listen to this podcast while getting eyelash extensions. You'll spend the whole time trying not to laugh when you are supposed to be holding very still. Hilarious, smutty fun.
Thank you.
Thanks. Also, yeah, imagine laughing, getting your eyelashes done. Scary.
And this week, we're telling Riley all about Darling Venom by Parker S. Huntington. And how many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads?
I still don't know.
You don't know?
I am so conflicted. Mm-hmm. If I was, like, reading this, like, not for the podcast, I would have literally stopped on page 30. Like, I literally would have, DNF'd it so fast.
What?
I'm very conflicted. I don't know.
Do you have, like, a rating that you're in between? Or, like, you just literally don't know at all?
I feel like I love a good redemption story. I just don't know, man. I'll have to tell you guys next time because I'm still sitting on it. It's really messing me up in the head.
Okay. Shelby?
When I read it in 2021, I gave it 4 stars. But this time around, it got 3.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think I would give it, like, a low 3. I'm sorry, Parker, if you're listening. It was well written.
Yeah.
It wasn't my vibe. No hate to the author. It was very well written.
No.
It takes a very talented person to write a book like this. It just isn't for me.
Why? Tell me why.
I just didn't like it.
Thank you.
Okay. That was very elaborate.
The book itself is honestly really hard to get. Like, it's really sad. I don't like sad books.
We're really selling this book.
If you're looking for a happy, smutty little book, this ain't it.
Truly, Parker, if you're listening, you're great.
Yes.
We love you.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you could be the world's juiciest peach and there's someone out there that doesn't like peaches.
Yeah.
Period. You know, everyone's allowed to like what they like and everyone's allowed to not like what they don't like.
Yeah. Could I write a book? Absolutely not.
Hell no.
No.
I bet you could. I bet you guys could.
Oh, my idea for the founding father smut.
I like it.
Be on the lookout for that.
Charlotte Herbane.
Founding daddies.
Let's go. Mm-hmm. So the book opens up to the main character, Charlotte. She is 14 years old. Her sister, Leah, calls her Lottie. Charlotte is in teenage angst right now. She's sitting in a bus full of a bunch of people, and all she can think about is how no one in this bus would care if she died tonight. It's Valentine's Day, and it's also her birthday, and her sister Leah completely hates her. But the cherry on top of why she decided today was going to be her last day alive was because no one acknowledged her birthday. Her parents are dead. Leah would be better off without her, and in her mind, it's an easy choice to make. We're starting off strong.
Yay.
Yeah.
She gets to her private school and decides the roof is the spot, and she realizes that she's not alone up there. There's a cloaked figure sitting on the edge, scooting closer. Just when she realized he was about to jump, she screamed at him to stop. The figure froze, and for the first time since the night of, she felt okay. Kellen is one of our main male characters, and he is sitting thinking about what everyone is going to say about his suicide. He was doing it because his brother Tate sucks. He feels like he ripped him from his dad and took control of his life. He literally made a pro and con list of whether or not to commit. And it has like your typical ones like no school, no homework, no more college discussions. And dying young is cool, but it's not. Everyone stay alive, okay?
Dying young is not cool.
Not cool.
No. His cons, though, he said that he'll miss his dad, his books, and Charlotte Richards. They don't know each other. She's just really pretty. Just as he was about to jump, she heard don't, and he froze because there was no way it could be her. He's still totally dumbfounded that she's on this roof talking to him because no one in school or even at home talks to him. Oh. They're sitting, drinking Coors that he pulled out of his backpack, and Lottie asked him if his parents knew he was getting hammered tonight. So he turned the question on her and was like, do your parents know? She dropped a, my parents are dead. He's pretty open and he asked what happened and she told him it was recently around Christmas time and there was a fire in her house. They sit on the edge and they have some major trauma dumping going on. Important info to note is that Kellen's dad is a writer and his mom was a model who he found dead by a cocaine overdose. His Jesus. Brother Tate, I guess now has custody of him and is keeping him away from his dad as some fucked up punishment because his dad wasn't there for Tate like he is for Kellen. Although Kellen was dead set on killing himself tonight, Charlotte Richards just changed that. He didn't want to do it with her there. Also, she made a good point. What if it's not high enough and they're stuck with broken necks and being vegetables for the rest of their life?
That would suck.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
That would be worse than dying.
Yeah.
Is that bad? Was that offensive?
I don't think so. I think that's the general consensus.
Okay.
It's a personal preference. I think you're supposed to put it in your will. Like, if I am a vegetable.
DNR.
Yeah.
Kill me. Take me out.
Yeah. I'm okay.
Stab
I'm
good. Me right there.
Stab you?
Yeah. Take off my, you know, I'm sure I'm like, what is it? Trached or whatever.
The
just pull it out. Yeah.
Okay. It out. And then stab you.
Yes.
Yeah. Why are we stabbing?
I don't know. You would already die of suffocation if you pull out a trach.
After I said it, I was like, wait, there would be other ways they could easily kill me before doing that and having trauma for the rest of their life, so.
You don't have to stab Riley.
Point being, nobody wants to be a vegetable.
Unless you do, and that's valid too.
Yeah, be a vegetable.
What if someone that's like, just like listening to the podcast, that's like...
in a coma. This is what wakes you up.
Surprise!
I'm awoken.
Charlotte gives him a book that was in her back pocket, basically giving him something to look forward to. She's like, hey, I really think that you'll like this book. Read it. And he was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to live, so I have nothing else to do right now.
It's like Get in My Swamp by GM Fairy.
Love
like,
it.
What the fuck is this? This is supposed to keep me from killing myself?
Yeah, it's Shrek erotica. You need to live.
You need to live so you can read the Shrek erotica.
We love you, GM Fairy.
Kellen is a loner in school and a social outcast, but only because he really wants to be. If you went straight by the facts, he would be popular. He's cute, rich, and has famous parents. But instead, he dresses punk and doesn't socialize with anyone. He wears like fishnets like on his arms and like gloves and stuff.
Ugh. Rawr.
Rock on.
Our girl Lottie, she's looking at him and she's thinking about how cute he is. She's like, damn, this man is fine. He talks about how her sister really does love her since she sacrificed her life to take care of her. And it was like a huge epiphany for her and she realized that she was not gonna die today. Lottie finally convinced Kellen not to jump tonight and he gave her his word. They come up with a pact where every year on her birthday, they meet on this rooftop. Same day, same rooftop, same time. And if either one of them decide to end it, they have to give each other a heads up. He made her promise two things. One, to never talk to him in public. And that's mainly for her safety since he thinks it would be social suicide for her to be seen with him, even though she said that she doesn't care. And two, that this pact is from freshman to senior year. And after they turn 18, they don't need babysitting. She agrees.
Social suicide?
She's like, boy, I was just about to do suicide anyways. Whatever, social.
I was gonna do regular.
I don't care. It's a year later and she's on the roof. Kellen is 5 minutes late, but he finally arrives. This past year, he's definitely changed his appearance and he started taking pills. They stuck to the pact that they don't socialize in public, but he does write her stories and she comments on them during their little book exchange that they do.
Cute. Also, what pills? You just said he started taking pills? You slide right by that? What kind of pills?
It was Oxy and something else. Another one of those.
Like Percocets or something?
A little perky.
He's got to numb the pain, you know?
This year for her birthday, he brings her two blueberry muffins. Kellen's got it bad for Charlotte, though. She's literally the only thing besides his dad that's keeping him alive. The boys are tragic to him in school. One guy, Mark McGowan, even gave him a swirly after they got in a fight, and all of Mark's friends cheered him on. It's another year later, so it's 2 years after the pact, and And Lottie is anxious to see Kellen because in school, it's almost as if he's been really, really struggling and has like a really dark aura around him. She almost broke her promise to talk to him or touch him, even wanting to hug him, because she could just tell that he's really suffering. The only thing that's changed this year was that she was hanging out with boys and let one of them kiss her. Mark McGowan.
Ew. Mark. He's the worst.
The kiss sucked, and they even kissed a couple more times and are like low-key seeing each other in secret. Kellen arrived early too, and she was taking him in like a fine bottle of wine and realizing how fucking beautiful he was. He gave her carrot cake for her birthday this year, and she missed him during their check-in that she doesn't have it in her anymore, that she's suicidal, and he says that it's still alive and kicking for him, so every day is like a really big struggle for him not to kill himself.
Oh.
Tate still wants him completely away from his dad and even stopped giving him allowance or lunch money. Kellen is literally telling her that he wants to die, and she's just like looking at him and she's like, damn, I want him. He's like, yeah, I might throw myself off this roof right now. And she's like, oh, he's so hot.
You hot little sad boy. Come here.
And she tells him that she started getting frisky with their mouth this year. And one thing led to another. And next thing that she knows, she's laying down on the roof and he's on top of her. She's laughing and they're having fun. And there's heavy breathing going on. And he tried talking to her about her awful first kiss. Who was it with? And when she said Mark's name, he abruptly stood up and said, nope. This isn't working for me. I gotta go.
Well, yeah. But she didn't know, right?
She had no idea.
It's crazy to me that kids, like, in school give swirlies, because that's kind of attempted murder. A swirly is a horrible thing.
I was literally gonna say, that should be a crime.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're waterboarding.
Yeah. Imagine how fucking scary that is, too, and, like, all of that water just, like, around your face. No.
And also, people shit in that water. Like, it's biological warfare.
Disgusting.
What is he? What could he get? A brain-eating amoeba?
Yeah, perhaps.
Pink eye too.
I'm gonna sign a petition.
Do it. No more swirlies.
Ban swirly.
Change.org.
At the beginning of the semester, Mark saw Kellen looking at Lottie, and he made it his mission to get into her pants. Kellen knows that Mark's doing this as revenge, and it's like really killing him. Kellen didn't return home that night. Tate found him at 4 a.m. covered in his own puke, sleeping on the streets.
Poor guy.
Even though her and Mark were in like a secret relationship that no one knew about, Mark decided to make their breakup very public by calling her a cheating bitch and spitting out on her in the cafeteria. She stood up for herself though and told him that his dick ain't shit in front of the whole school, and like everyone laughed. So it's 3 years after the pact. She's 17 now. It's another year on the roof. And this year for her birthday, Kellen gives her a Valentine's Day teddy bear. She gives him a penny for his thoughts, and he says, fuck your money, and slowly, fairly walks towards her and scoops her into his arms on top of the roof.
Oh.
He tells her this is not the beginning of something. If anything, this is the end.
She tasted like sweet venom, warm and cottony and dreamlike, deadly toxic, gorgeously addictive. I kissed her hungrily, my tongue thrusting into her mouth, erasing Mark. I wanted to do bad things to her, and it frightened me. These thoughts had started last year, after Mark McGowan. My desire for Charlotte had laced with something else, something darker. Maybe they were in this together, Charlotte and Mark, to make me lose my mind. It's just mental warfare up there for him. Mm-hmm. Poor guy.
Kellen's life is going downhill. His brother Tate and his brother's fiance Hannah broke up, and Tate blamed him, now making him go to therapy twice a week, and so he started doing meth.
Okay.
God. I'll show you.
He said, therapy?
I'm a meth around.
His dad completely stopped answering him. And that is like a huge thing for him, because like his dad was one of the only things that was also keeping him like alive, because he like idolized his dad. Plus, guys like him never get the girl they wanted, aka Charlotte. So he feels really hopeless right now. He's at his breaking point. Their kiss got steamy, and he gave himself a few more seconds of it before he broke it off. He kept her penny and said, see you next year, Venom. After that kiss, she didn't care if he didn't want her to be seen with him in public. She wanted him, and he needed her. She knew it. But she also knew that she was going to break the pact, but she decided it was worth it. So one day at lunch, she confronted him and he completely ignored her. People were filming and he like completely embarrassed her in front of the whole school. So he just got up and walked away. He's like a major social outcast. So she like stood in front of him and was just trying to like reach out to him. And he was just like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
No.
They get into a little fight in the hallway and she knows that he's pushing her away and it hurts. She tried texting him, demanding to know who Venom is, because he called her that during their fight and he won't answer. answer her. It's you, baby. Lottie wrote a 4-page letter to the principal stating that Kellen was suicidal. And 2 weeks later, Kellen finally texted her back saying that she breached the contract twice. So next Valentine's Day is off, which is their last one since they'll both be 18 after that and the pact will be over. She's trying to call him and text him, but she realized that he's blocked her number. It's 6 months after the kiss and she found his address. She plans to yell at Tate to confront him and also to tell him that Kellen is suicidal. She's literally standing in front of his house like forever for hours when his living room blinds open up and she sees Kellen sitting there. He called the police on her for being on his property and she's hurt because everything is such a slap in the face. Her going to his house to tell Tate of all people that he's suicidal and that Kellen called the cops on her.
God, what the fuck?
He's in a dark place.
He's doing meth.
Yeah. It's Valentine's Day and their last meeting, even though it's technically called off because of what Kellen said. Just as she was about to leave, she heard Leah, her sister, say she wished she was never born. Before the night of, Leah and Lottie were best friends. Leah literally walked through fire for her. Leah sighs and says to forget what she said because obviously she's happy she was born. Leah asked Lottie to pick her up a pack of menthol before she goes on her mystery date. And even though she would be late to Kellen, she knows that like she can't really refuse her sister. So she agrees. She's 40 minutes late getting to the school because she went to the store for Leah. Even though he technically canceled, she knew that he still wanted someone to fight for him. As she's pulling up to the school, there's an ambulance and a police car and tape, and she realized that's exactly where they sat every year. As she fell to her knees, she felt something under her, and it was his last birthday gift to her, a penny. Because he always said, like, penny for your thoughts. That was, like, their thing. So he committed suicide.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Which was, like, really sad. In the book, it was still, like, horrible. 0 out of 10. Don't recommend.
That's terrible. I thought he was the love interest this whole time.
Kind of. I guess it never really stops because he died, so.
Yeah.
It's 4 years later after Kellen's death, and it's Valentine's Day, aka his death day, aka her birthday. She graduated college and is currently working as a literary agent assistant. Her boss sent her to schedule an appointment with her OBGYN when she gets to the clinic. The receptionist told her that she can't schedule any appointments for Dr. Marchetti today. That's Kellen's last name, and it made her heart stop. The receptionist said that he's in the office, but he doesn't take any calls or appointments on Valentine's Day, only urgent cases. She said, fine, I'll wait. That was until she saw Tatum Marchetti, MD, on the door. And she walked right in. She was like, oh, hell no. That is Kellen's brother.
Well, she's gonna fuck this man.
She walked in on him fucking another woman, and he's like looking at her. He's like literally balls deep in this woman, and he's just staring at her.
Awkward.
Yeah. To my horror, I felt myself squeezing my thighs against nothing. My nipples were hard, and for the first time in years, I thanked my lucky stars I was so flat-chested I had to wear a padded bra. She's a little turned on.
She basically is like, make this appointment for me. He grabbed his iPad. Lottie hopes that he's booking the appointment, but then he demands her to get out of his office because he doesn't make appointments today. She's like, if I apologize, will you do this for me? He basically was like, you could suck my dick, do tricks, and nothing would make me do that. She says, I can see why he hated you so much because you're so loathsome. She really went below the belt when she told him she hopes the last thing he thinks about when he closes his eyes is the fact that his brother chose death over living under his roof. And then she wished him a happy Valentine's Day and then left before he could answer.
He's like, what the fuck?
He's like, trying to fuck this lady. Talk about blue ball. Yeah.
Also, that woman's probably like, oh my god, what is she talking about?
Get out. This goes into Tate's point of view. So Tate is Kellen's brother and he's 34 years old. They have a 12-year age gap. She's 22 right now. When Miss Richard came into his office and called him Tate, he knew that she must have had some connection to Kellen because Kellen was the only person to ever call him Tate. And she said the whole thing about him hating him. So he was like, yep, she must know me. The thought of Kellen having one friend ignited him. Up until his death, Kellen would lie about hanging out with people. So Tate didn't know he was such a loner until he actually died and there was like 6 people at his funeral.
Oh.
But then he's thinking, like, what if Kellen had one friend? He tried rushing after her, but he missed her. So he called her boss to set the appointment for tomorrow, but then also asked for their office address because he plans on visiting her. Tate's having their annual Valentine's dinner with his dad. It's a tradition that they started after Kellen died. And it's one of the rare times that he sees his dad, unless his dad runs out of money, cocaine, or people to cry to. Tate asked his dad if he knew that Kellen had a girlfriend, and he denied, but he was like really sus about it. And his dad kind of started blaming Tate for Kellen's death, but Tate dropped the bomb saying that their father basically dropped Kellen off with Tate to do God knows what with God knows who and forced him to take on the father role while he got fucked up. So like Kellen's point of view, was that Tate was ripping him from his dad. But in reality, his dad dropped him off with his brother and left the state.
That's so sad. Because then he thinks his brother's this big piece of shit. I don't know if he's a big piece of shit. I can't tell. But he died thinking his brother was. That's so sad.
Imagine, like, you as a teenager and all the people you thought were, like, out to get you. And, like, all the people you thought were pieces of shit. And they were actually just trying to help you.
I know. Like,
it's horrible.
So sad.
Reading Tate's side of things, like, how he was just talking about their father and stuff, is so contrasting to Kellen's. Because Tate is in so much pain that Kellen is dead. And this whole time, Kellen was like, he doesn't give a fuck about me. This man could not care if I drop dead right now. Kellen's room is still completely not touched from the last day he was in it. Like, he can't even step foot in his brother's room. That's how much pain he is in that he died. Tate basically stalked Charlotte the next day. When he finally was able to talk to her, she saw that he had a picture of Kellen as his lock screen, and she knew that he must care. Plus, he threatened her job if she didn't say yes to talking about Kellen. So they agreed to meet at a cafe tomorrow at 6, and she asked if they could exchange numbers, and he said no. After tomorrow, he doesn't want anything to do with her.
I mean, fair.
She gets to her apartment, and she meets her across the street neighbor, Jonah, who was wondering if her sister Leah was single, but Leah hasn't seen anyone since the fire due to the scars on her face and neck. And sweet Jonah was like, she's beautiful, even though Leah doesn't believe it. It's the next day and it's 6 p.m. and her and Tate meet. He gets her coffee and then asks if she was ever going to come forward to tell Tate that her and Kellen were friends. And she said no. They told each other like the basics, but she did bend the truth, like where they met, which was in a classroom as far as Tate knows. So she never told him that she was on the roof with him. She learned the truth about the custody battle with Kellen and his father, which was a lie from Terry.
And Terry's his dad. That's his dad's name.
Oh, okay.
When she asked about Tate monitoring Kellen's time with his dad, Tate said it was because his dad was the one that was giving Kellen the drugs. Oh. So all the things that he was trying to do for Kellen was literally to help save him. But Terry and like kind of spun it the other way around, saying that Tate was trying to like take him from him.
Oh God, that's so fucked up.
She lied to Tate about two more things. One, when he asked if Kellen ever told her he wanted to kill himself. And two, when he asked if they were just friends or something more. She said they were just friends. He was about to leave and she was just grasping at straws for him to stay. And she told him that she wrote the letter to the principal. He asked what her drink of choice was and he called her new nickname, which is Charlie. She told him about the 4-page letter she wrote to the principal and they shared innocent information about Kellen with each other. And the next thing that she knows, they've been talking for 5 hours. She gets home to a box with a note and it's for Leah from Jonah, their neighbor, asking her out this weekend. But Leah just told her to leave it. Her sister's in like a deep, deep depression over the fire. She texted Jonah not to give up on Leah because she's worth it. Terry, Kellen's father, is a drunk and he's begging for money from Tate, saying that he's about to be evicted, and somehow he convinced Tate to let him stay in his house. There are a few rules though. No drugs, no alcohol, and absolutely no setting foot into Kellen's room. Tate slips into a smoothie bar and he sees Charlie eating a carrot cake, and a memory of Valentine's Day 5 or 6 years ago flashes in his mind when Kellen called him in the middle of his shift asking him to get a cake because he had a date. He linked her in the carrot cake and sat next to her, starting the convo by saying, you lied to me, by saying that you guys were just friends. If that's true, why meet on Valentine's Day with a cake? And she told him it was her birthday. He asked if she would help him with Kellen's room on Friday since it's been completely untouched and he hasn't been able to walk in it. Reluctantly though, she agrees. Like, she knows, she can see that he's like suffering with the pain of his loss. It's Friday and she gets to the house. She's taking a look around, making small talk, when she makes a little jab about OBGYNs not having the best dirty talk in the world.
My back was to Tate when he answered me. Bet you all the pennies in your cheap little purse that I can make you drip cum on my face in less than 10 seconds before I even use my tongue or cock. Tate!
Woof woof.
Goodness.
She was like, I need a drink. But stupid Terry's in the house and there's no alcohol, so she has to drink water. But she is getting hot and bothered over that. They get to Kellen's room and they start cleaning. They were able to get rid of everything except for 2 drawers that are locked in his desk. They could easily break it apart, but they don't. They'll find the keys later. He asks her to distract him from having a panic attack. He's like, tell me your big tragedy in life. She's like, I'd rather not. But she ends up telling him about how when Leah went to a party, she snuck into her room and lit one of her cigarettes. She thought she put it out before throwing it in the trash can in Leah's room, and then went to bed and fell asleep. She wakes up later to the house completely on fire. She opened her door enough that it burned her, and she saw everything was engulfed in flames. Leah came to the house and called to her, and she ran like literally like straight into Leah's arms, and they were able to like kind of walk out of the house together, but one of the walls fell on top of Leah, scarring her entire right side, and their parents died in the fire because of her.
No, my biggest fear.
She started crying, and he pulled her into his lap and let her cry it out, but then he was like, you gotta go.
She was like, okay, I guess I'll go. Fuck this guy, he's a dick.
And she's like, every time that she thinks that he has redeeming qualities, he does something that's like kind of dickish. But then the next chapter goes into Tate's point of view, and he literally threw Charlie out of his room because she was like crying in his lap, but he was like getting a boner. And he's like, this is so fucked up. This girl's gotta go.
She's telling me how her parents died, and that's getting hell hard.
He said, God, that's hot. Reagan, who's her boss, wanted to send her to Dr. Marchetti to give him the gender reveal invitation. She lied to her boss, saying that all delivery options were unavailable, so she had to hand deliver it herself. In his office, she finds out that Kellen was accepted to Harvard in December. That just leaves her with so many more questions. If he actually applied to college, did he have something to look forward to? Why did he commit? He knew that he had an out. Tate gets home from his long-ass shift in the hospital to Terry, his dad, asleep on Kellen's bed. The desk that had the two locked things in it was completely pried open and in bits. And he's snoring on Kellen's bed with a huge stack of paper bound together with a paperclip. He kicks Terry out for breaking his most important rule and goes back into Kellen's room. He finds a manuscript that says Darling Venom and slid it under Kellen's bed before throwing up in his trash can. Charlotte is at the gender reveal and they're talking about OBGYNs, and it's revealed that she's never been to one. And Reagan, her boss, is like, girl, let me help you. I got an in. We'll get you seen ASAP. Charlotte agrees because she doesn't want anyone knowing that she hasn't been to an OBGYN yet because she's a virgin.
Oh.
Side note though, even if you're over 21, go get a pap done, girl. Even if you haven't had sex.
And also, if that's weird of your boss, if they're like, we should get you one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You should just do it.
She's like, yeah, okay. A beautiful blonde woman shows up to the shower, and it's Tate's ex-fiance, Hannah, who Hannah threatened to ship Kellen off to military school, and Charlotte was like, fuck this bitch. But she stayed as long as she could, and just as she was about to go, Tate walked in. It's awkward with Hannah and Charlotte both there, because Hannah wants closure, and he's really liking Charlotte. But instead of battling it head on, he just decides to run like he does best. She gets to work to a signed copy of The Imperfections, which is Terry, who's their dad. It was like his biggest number one book, and it's like a huge thing that she had a signed copy because he doesn't do signed copies anymore. It was part of the little bargain that they had for her helping him with Kellen's room, and she knew that having this book meant that there's nothing after this. She doesn't have his number, so she writes him a long letter, puts his address on it, and puts a stamp on it, but she never intends to send it to him. She just puts it in the drawer, and she's like, I'm gonna shred this later.
Okay.
Which is weird. Like, why like address and stamp it if you're not gonna send it?
Yeah, no, that'd be enough for
a
me
waste
to be
of
like,
a stamp.
I'm gonna send it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do
but
it.
But she's like, no, I'm gonna do all these things and then shred it for later, but I'm not gonna do it right now. I'm gonna put it in a drawer.
That is a waste of a stamp. You're right, Shelby.
Yeah, those add up.
Reagan tells her that she was able to get an appointment with Dr. Marchetti, and she's like, fuck, I do not want this hot, sexy man in my cooter kitty. But she also didn't want to seem ungrateful because someone in Reagan's family died of cervical cancer, and she's like, you need to go to the OBGYN. So she just accepts it, and she's like, yes, I'll make the appointment.
Yeah, let him look at your pussy.
So she goes to the appointment that Reagan helped schedule for her, and she finishes her intake paperwork, and she's led to an exam room. She gets ready for the exam by stripping, but she can't help but feel super insecure comparing herself to the woman that she walked in on him banging at the office. She's like, man, I look nothing like her naked, so this is kind of shitty. She also, since she's never been, wears the lap paper like a cape so her, oh, her bottom's exposed because she doesn't want her crack out, so she like wears it as a cape. He walks in and he's like, that's one way to wear it. Usually people put it on their lap, but here's how today is going to go. He's very professional and demands verbal consent to anything that he's going to do.
Also, do you guys have male OBGYNs?
No.
I do.
I do too.
I think it's weird, but it's not. I know it's not. And this is just my weird opinion, but I think it's weird that a man is like, oh, the kind of doctor I want to be is a gynecologist.
I'm going to stare into a vagina all day.
I want to look at pussies every day. I don't know why. It feels weird to me. I don't know why it does. It's not. It just feels so weird to me.
My doctor's like a pup-up. Like, he's old. And he just, like, gets in there. We don't have conversations. He just gets in there, does his business, and then he'll talk to me after, which I do like, too. Because I hate when they're, like, having, like, so, how's your day? And they're, like, elbow deep in your pussy.
Oh, that's what mine does.
I don't like that.
Well, okay. So the reason I brought it up is because with my OBGYN, since he's a male, he has to have a female nurse in there for everything. This doesn't happen to her in the book.
No, which is like illegal now. Like you have to, a male doctor has to have one. They have to have a female MA in there at all times.
The female MA that works with my doctor, she's an old coworker of mine from when I worked at a retail store in my early 20s. So I walked in and she was like, "Charlotte, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then she had to like stare into my butthole.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, she's seen a bunch.
She has. But I was like, damn, when we worked together, I never thought you'd be staring into my orifices. But here we are. She's seen my butthole countless times.
One of my first few pap smears, I asked my doctor when she was like down in there scraping away. I said, "Does my vagina look weird? Is it like weirder than other vaginas?" And she was like, "No."
I don't think there's really a such thing as like a weird vagina, though, because all vaginas are so different. So like, how can they be weird if they're all so different?
I don't think there's any two vaginas that are the same.
No, it's like a fingerprint.
They're like snowflakes.
Yeah.
Unique. Oh,
that's a beautiful I love that.
Yeah. All unique.
Every one of your guys' pussies is unique.
And beautiful.
And beautiful.
She ties her gown so tight he can't perform a breast exam, so she says to skip it. He offers to show her how to do one at home on her own time, and she says okay. So he pulls out like a fake boob, and she's not paying attention at all. So she's like, "You know what? I'm never going to remember this. Let's just untie this knot real quick." As he is performing her breast exam, she starts to get aroused and feels like a complete pervert. And then she moans when he pushes a specific spot on her breast, and she's mortified. He's like, "You're good. We're going to move on to the pap smear now." She does let him know that in her chart, it says that she's a virgin. And he tells her that the chances of her hymen being affected are super low, but he'll be really careful. And then he gets started. He asks to spread her legs to begin, and she's really aroused now.
In a sterile environment, she's like, "Oh my god."
Like, he didn't even need lube or anything.
Yeah, he doesn't need lube to do this.
Oh my god.
He does let her know, though, that he's not going to do the bi-manual exam because he doesn't want to break her hymen. And she says, "Just do it. I want to make sure I don't have cancer. Like, here's an email. I give you consent. Just fucking go for it." And he's like, "Okay."
He's like, "Get in there."
So he does.
I lifted my ass from the exam table, my mouth falling open with pain and desire. He hadn't expected the movement because my clit connected with his palm. My toes curled. I bit my tongue to stop myself from crying out. What is happening?
She's getting her rocks off at her pap smear. She's
getting the bi-manual exam where he puts her fingers and pushes on her belly, you know, and she's liking it.
When his palm hit her clit, he definitely did that on purpose.
Yeah. He knows his way around a pussy.
He definitely does.
Yeah.
He should.
Yeah. As he continues, she has an orgasm and he notices.
I'm embarrassed. I'm getting secondhand embarrassment right now.
She's mortified, and he finishes up by saying that her future OBGYN will need to go over her results with her about this and to treat her body like she's still a virgin, because technically she is. And then he leaves.
Oh, I'd cry. I would cry. I hate this.
Tate is super thankful for his busy schedule, so he cannot sit down and think about her appointment once she left. He knows what happened is normal, and it's also happened with other patients, but he's stuck on her orgasm in particular. It's now a couple days after her appointment, and he finds himself outside her work. He sees her, and he decides he needs a plan of action to get rid of his blue balls. She's leaving the office with her coworker when Tate surprises her. She asks what he's doing there, and he says that he's answering her question from before.
"I wasn't concerned about your sex life because you were a patient," he said casually. "I'm concerned about it because I want to fuck your brains out until you lose the ability to walk straight, unfortunately for me."
Oh my god.
That's crazy.
She's shocked, and he stuns her even more by saying he's no longer her OBGYN since he has a personal interest in her. She asks if he wants to date or something, and he responds,
"I don't date. I fuck." "If you're happy with that arrangement, you know where to find me. I'm fond of you, Charlie, which is why I'm going to advise you, as a friend, not to take me up on that offer. I'm too old, too jaded, and too fucked up to give you what you want outside the bedroom."
Oh, he's a bad boy.
"I fuck hard."
God. What is that, Christian Grey?
Yeah.
They go about their separate ways, and we then learn a bit more about his dad's like one-hit wonder book and how he's kind of a deadbeat who mooches off Tate. When he gets home, Terry asks Tate where Kellen's manuscript is because he can't find it. Tate tells him that he's only staying there for free because he's supposed to be working, but Terry tells him that he can't finish another book. And Tate's like, then you have to fucking go. I'm done with this. But Terry panics and tells Tate that he can't write another book because he plagiarized the imperfections. So he's a fake, a phony.
What do you mean?
Boo.
He plagiarized the whole book.
Like his popular book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The book that like Kellen was obsessed with and like looked up to him for.
Uh-huh. And like the why he wanted to be a writer was because of that book.
How did nobody know that he plagiarized that book?
Is that in your part, Charlotte?
Yeah. He's written some other books and everyone's like, these books suck.
Yeah.
Oh.
Tate demands for him to further elaborate on this, and all Terry says is it's someone else's words, not his. Tate's disgusted and can't look at his dad anymore, so he locks himself in his room, wondering why his brother ever idolized him. We're now with Charlotte, and she cannot get the doctor visit out of her mind, and she knows that she needs to focus on work. She also knows she can never admit the truth to Tate about his brother and how she knew he was in so much pain, but didn't really speak up about it. Which, she should give herself credit, because she tried a couple different ways.
Yeah, she did more than most people would do.
She tries to donate some of Kellen's books to the library, because Tate gave her a bunch of books from his room when they did the clean out to donate, but she ends up chickening out and runs to a bar where she sees Tate. She doesn't go inside the bar though, she's just like standing there watching him from the window.
Like a little creep.
She is about to go inside to see if he's okay before she remembers that she shouldn't care and is going to turn and leave. He's drunk and thinking of all the ways he never knew his little brother, and the bartender has to cut him off. As he's about to argue with the bartender, he sees Charlie outside of the window, so he pays and chases after her. Once he catches up to her, he accidentally knocks them both to the ground and begs her to tell him about Kellen. She gets up to continue walking, and that's when he realizes that she's wearing Kellen's jacket. She tells him that she doesn't have time for this and to go home, and he thinks about how he should tell her about Kellen's book, but stops himself. When she gets home, she has a small conversation with Leah, which gives her a bit of hope that maybe she actually wants to talk to her, but it's super short-lived because Leah just goes back to ignoring her. She leaves and goes across the hallway to Jonah to beg him to try to ask out her sister again, and he says that he will. She's been avoiding Tate lately, but since her boss is pregnant and is patient, she can't avoid him forever, especially when Reagan and her get in a cab and Reagan doubles over in pain. Charlotte calls his office to let him know there's an emergency and they're heading to the hospital. Tate meets them there and ignores Charlotte to take care of Reagan, and even when he's done, he's still kind of ignoring her, and she wonders why when she sees her letter that she wrote in his pocket.
How'd he get it?
Yeah, how did he get it?
I thought someone like went through her stuff and like mailed it.
I don't remember, but he had the letter.
Damn.
She touches base with Reagan real quick to make sure she's okay and then heads home. When she gets there, Leah is fucking pissed that Charlotte said something to Jonah because he tried to ask her out again after she's repeatedly told him no.
That would also piss me off.
But she's trying to help.
Yeah.
She follows Leah into her room to further argue about this and tell her how much she loves her sister, and then Leah tells her to get out. When she turns around, she sees a letter that has familiar looking handwriting on it. It's one from Kellen, and she demands to know where Leah got it. Leah says it's not a big deal, but some kid dropped it off Valentine's night during Charlotte's senior year.
What?
Charlotte's like, that was my friend Kellen, and he killed himself that night, and this is the last thing that I have of him, so thanks for keeping that. Like, you could tell she feels fucking awful for once and is about to say something, but Charlotte leaves. She goes to the high school roof where she met Kellen and opens the letter. Two keys fall to her lap and she reads the letter and cries. So the keys are to his desk drawer where the manuscript was. It's 3 a.m. and someone is ringing the doorbell over and over again. Tate assumes it's Terry, but when he rips the door open, it's Charlotte standing there demanding to know where Kellen's manuscript is. He plays stupid because he doesn't want to give it up, even though he hasn't read it, and she begins to tell him about the letter she just uncovered, and it states in the letter like Kellen left that manuscript for her to finish. He's like, this is yours, finish it, do with it what you want. Tate doesn't believe her though until she pulls it out, and his heart stops demanding a trade, the letter for the manuscript. She says fuck no. He starts to make jabs at her when she shuts him down and lets him read a couple lines, and more importantly, the line that says the manuscript's hers.
He starts off the letter by saying, "My darling Venom." So he like realizes that she's Venom.
Oh, okay.
He tells her to go up to his room and get it from his safe. The code is Kellen's birthday. She grabs it and leaves. It's been a week, and she finally worked up the courage to drop off Kellen's old books at the library. As she browses aisles looking for books, she notices someone keeping her pace on the next aisle over. And every time she tries to grab a book, they try to grab the same book on the other side. As she finishes down the aisle, she turns, and the person that was on the opposite side is Tate. He admits that he's defensive because of how they grew up, and he regrets that he failed Kellen so terribly. They come to a truce, and he pulls her to him, kissing her possessively.
Oh!
Mwah. They break apart, and he knows that her lunch break is almost over, which, creepy, Tate. Creepy. And she goes to walk away, hoping that he asks for her number, but he doesn't ask. Her phone rings as she gets to the exit of the library, and it's Tate.
Oh, he's got
it. He doesn't say anything. He just breathes into the line like a fucking weirdo.
Just
So she says, "Penny for your thoughts.
I would like to see more of you and less of your clothes. A penny for yours. I want to kiss you hard, to let you rip me to shreds with your hands and tongue and words. I want to tell you the whole entire truth and hold you while you come to terms with it."
Fuck that man.
All she tells him is that she has to go. She finally picks up the manuscript and reads some notes he left in the chapter. And as she starts reading it, she's like, "This is fucking good." But she stops after four chapters to keep her sanity intact. It's a love story. Their love story specifically that never got a chance to happen. And it's also kind of like a biography too. Tate has the day off of work because he cannot stop thinking about kissing Charlotte. He feels awful that he clearly kissed Kellen's high school crush, but he wants to do it again. He calls her to ask more questions about Kellen, and she's like, "Okay, like we could talk about him." She tells him again how she tried to help and get the school staff involved before Kellen was gone and how no one did anything. She goes on about like grief is a side effect of love and all this other stuff, and then hangs up the phone. The doorbell goes off and he answers it to find her standing there. He secretly hopes she's going to kiss him, but she tells him to read the manuscript and she'll be staying at his house to finish editing it like Kellen wanted her to do. He thinks back to the last night of Kellen being alive and tries to make his own timeline of events where Charlie's letter fits into it. His OBGYN practice partner is concerned about how much work he's missing and calling out, and he's missing up like patient charts and stuff like that. But Tate's too distracted and just brushes him off and is like, "I'm fine, I'll figure it out." The next day he runs into Charlie downstairs and she's cleaning and tidying up his house, and she admits that she's worried about Tate. He doesn't want her pity, but she stops him saying that she lost one Marchetti brother and she won't lose another, and he tells her to be gone by the time he's back from work.
Ugh.
She's not. She's still there and she's working on the manuscript. She tries to talk to him, but he ignores her, so they go about their business in silence. He hears her stomach growl and passes her a pile of takeout menus since he has no food at the house. She unknowingly picks his old favorite restaurant and a meal that he tries not to get sick over. They get her food and he tells her about when he first met Kellen. So Kellen's his half-brother. They have different moms.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Kellen's mom didn't want to take care of him anymore, so she dropped him off with Tate. So Tate and his mom, and then Terry was just in and out of the picture.
Oh, okay.
They share a couple more nice moments reliving memories about Kellen, and she tells him a short story Kellen wrote about a couple years ago, and then they part ways for the night. The next day he finds his fridge fully stocked and he knows that Charlie did this. He goes to Kellen's room to thank her and finds her lying on the bed talking to the ceiling. He doesn't interrupt her, he just lets her talk for a moment until he realizes she says something very specific, and now he's fucking pissed. As she's talking to the ceiling, it's like clear that she knew that Kellen was suicidal, and she told Tate that she did not know that.
So, but wait, I'm confused about that part, because she tells Tate she didn't know he was suicidal, but she also tells Tate that she went to the school saying, "Hey, I'm worried that he's suicidal." So
like the way that she words it is like, "Why did we make that pact together and you didn't keep your end?" So like she's says specifically like how she also was.
Oh.
And he did not know that. It's however long now, Charlie finished the manuscript and knows Tate is 100% avoiding her. She calls another publisher named Helen to let her know that she has a manuscript she might be interested in. She puts a copy of it in the mail, and a week later, Helen calls to talk to her about it. She admits that she loved it, and Charlie has to explain that the author of it is no longer with them. She actually has full rights to it, but any proceeds made on the book will be donated under the author's name to the New York Society Library. She admits to Helen who the author is, and they talk all the nitty-gritty on how everything proceeds after this. She still hasn't left Tate's yet, so Tate wants her to fucking leave now that she's done, but she's like, I can't, I'm fighting with my sister. He decides to take matters into his own hands with Leah and goes to their apartment to confront her. Leah lets him in as he starts to reprimand her over how rude she is to Charlie. After going around in circles, he decides that he needs to be real and vulnerable to, like, hopefully get through to her, and tells her that he didn't help Kellen and he could have. There's still hope for them as sisters before it's too late. Charlotte's standing down the street from Tate's house like a stalker, waiting for him to leave so she could talk to Terry about teaming up to edit the book. When she sees him leave, she lets herself in, and Terry's fucking disgusting. He, like, looks her up and down like, the younger one's not here, so you can have this one if you want, with, like, potato chip crumbs everywhere. And, like,
disgusting.
Clearly gross. Hungover. And she's like, not here for that. Thank you for the opportunity, though. I want to know if you would like to help me edit Kellen's manuscript. He's like, fuck yeah, I need to finish reading it. Like, give it to me. She's like, no, there's going to be rules about this. He wants to know if there's rules, and if he helps her, what's in it for him? And she's like, literally nothing. You will not make any money off of this. You could just be a good person and do this for your fucking kid.
Yeah.
She starts reading him a passage from the book about how Kellen saw Terry, and Terry starts breaking down crying, says he'll help. She passes him a legal contract to sign that states he gives up any claim to the manuscript once it's edited, and he cannot plagiarize it. And he signs it and he agrees. It's been months since Tate gave her the manuscript, but Charlie's still living there.
Jesus.
She lets him know she got a promotion at work and she might leave, but she can't since Terry's helping her edit the manuscript. He doesn't believe her, but she's like, believe what you want. That's what we're doing. He leaves, and at work, he thinks about Kellen, and when they got into their first physical fight, he returns home numb, and Charlotte's still there, but he's standing in the rain before she opens the door and drags him inside. He admits that he hates her for a bunch of things, but hates himself most of all for still wanting her, even though she's Kellen's. She apologizes to him for not telling him everything when she knew all the details. She thought she could handle all that stuff on her own, and she couldn't, and she regrets it. So she's like, I'm sorry that even though we were both feeling that way, like, I didn't try harder to come talk to you and let you know. I only tried the one time. They go back and forth on it until she kisses him and silences the conversation.
Oh, they're kissing. I lifted her in my arms, gripping handfuls of her ass. This time, she folded her legs around my waist, letting me carry her to my front door. I pressed her against it and dug my erection between her thighs. I pinched her nipple through her dress and brought my hand between us, dipping below the skirt and into her panties. My finger slipped in easily. She claimed my lips again, sucking my tongue into her mouth, hands cradling both sides of my face. More, she begged again, resting her forehead on mine.
They're getting into it.
She grabs his dick through his pants and rides his fingers. She admits that she wants him inside of her as he fingers her, and then they break apart. It's done. They go to bed. Nothing more.
What the fuck?
Night-night. The next day, she tells Reagan the truth of where she got the manuscript and how protective she is of it. Reagan tells her that she's very proud of her and offers to help look over the contract once Helen sends everything over. She goes to her apartment for space from Tate when Leah walks out, all dolled up, and Charlotte is shocked. Leah admits that she has her first date with Jonah and needs help picking her outfit.
Oh.
That night, Charlotte gives Terry a $1,000 gift card to get a room for himself in Soho to work alone on the manuscript, but really she just wants him out of the house so she can be alone with Tate. She waits and waits for Tate, but he never shows up, and she leaves and heads back to her apartment to find Tate waiting there for her. Oh. So she was waiting at his house, he was waiting at her house. And then she finally gave up and then went back and saw him. And he asks her if she wants to go for a walk, even though it's 2 a.m. And they agree to go to a nearby playground, which was so weird, but yeah. All right.
A little weird, yeah. A morsel of what I wanted to happen flashed behind my lids. Us, tangled in the jungle gym, screwing on the swings. Him, eating me out on the slide. Ma'am, children play there.
Yeah.
Gross. They walk over and she plops down on a swing and he starts pushing her, saying he doesn't know what he's doing with her. They talk a little bit about Kellen and go sit on the jungle gym where Charlotte tells Tate that she wants him inside of her.
Oh.
He tells her he's so fucking obsessed with her and kisses her. They spend the rest of the night making out at the playground. The next night, Terry and Charlotte work on the manuscript, and Terry is super sober now and they make a lot of progress. So it seems like working on the manuscript is really helping Terry get his life together.
Yeah.
Oh, good. No more messing around for Terry.
Yeah. Charlotte tells him she sold the book to the publishing company, and Terry is gushing about how his son is a published author, and Charlotte tells him how much Kellen admired his father, but Terry is like, not towards the end, he didn't. Terry left his dead mother for him to find just so he wouldn't get swarmed by the press. Because when Kellen's mother died, he was super, super popular for The Imperfections. So he knew that if he were to be the one that found Kellen's mother, it would be all over the press. So he just left her body there knowing that Kellen would find his own mother.
Oh, God.
He says he plagiarized The Imperfections. He's a fraud and he killed his own son because he blames himself for Kellen being so fucked up. She tells him maybe he should focus on working things out on his living son, and Terry unloads, saying that he wants that more than anything, and Tate is the only reason he's still alive today. And then they turn around to see Tate, who heard everything his father just said. A few days later, things at Charlotte's are going better. Her and Leah have had a breakthrough, and they're back on good terms, and things are even going well with Leah and Jonah. They're officially dating now, and Leah even lets him see her without makeup sometimes, which is a huge thing. She works as a makeup artist, and she constantly has this like mask of makeup on to cover her scars, and now she's letting Jonah see her without makeup, and he thinks she's like the most beautiful thing in the world.
He's so sweet.
Leah tells Charlotte about Tate coming over to yell at her and says at first she was angry, but then after she thought on it, it was really eye-opening and she realized that he was right. Meanwhile, Tate is spiraling, and after an OBGYN conference, he goes to a dive bar and gets shit-faced. The bartender won't let him leave in his state, so he's forced to call Charlotte for a ride, and the bartender takes his phone and is like, who am I calling? And sees that he only has two contacts, and one is the other doctor at his practice and the other one is Charlotte, and those are the only two numbers in his phone. Obviously, she shows up right away and is super sad to see him in the state he's in. She carries him out of the bar and asks what the fuck is going on with him, and he says he keeps imagining fucking the love of his dead brother's life occasionally with his dick in his hand, and Charlotte finds it hard to breathe all of a sudden. But she tells him she's determined to save him the way she couldn't save Kellen, and gets them a cab. The next day, Charlotte brings takeout to Tate's work and forces him to eat something, because he's not eating, he's not sleeping, he's doing really drinking. Bad. Yeah.
Oh, poor guy.
She tells him he can call her anytime, and she yawns, and he's like, are you tired? And she was like, yeah, I had a late night. Someone kept me up hella late, calling me to pick them up from the bar. She actually winds up falling asleep in his office for an hour or so, and when she wakes up, Tate is right up in her face, and they wind up having this steamy makeout session. He picks her up off the couch and pins her against the door, grinding into her, not caring about anyone else on the other side, because they are fully at his work during business hours.
This man.
I know, no shame. He kneels down in front of her and pulls her shorts and panties off.
You owe me all the pennies in your purse. He stared at my core. The wetness pooled, running down my thigh. I made you drip before I even used my tongue or cock. He seemed more pliable than usual, so even though my cheeks burned, I mustered all my courage to push him over the edge. Double or nothing. If you make me come on your tongue, I'll give you all the pennies in the world. I couldn't believe I'd just said that, but it worked. Tate gripped my thigh tighter. Deal. He leaned forward, talking directly to my pussy. I'm about to be a very rich man. His nose nudged my clit, teeth grazing the lips that bracketed it. He sucked one into his mouth before moving onto the bundle of nerves between them. Then he licked the outline of my sex with the tip of his tongue, slowly, slowly, so, so slowly, until he finally plunged, thrusting into me.
She can hear all the people outside the door stop talking, and she knows they know what's going on in their boss's office. She tells him she needs him inside of her, and he says she needs to come first, and plunges two fingers into her, making her come almost instantly, and she's like, please just fuck me. He stands up, and she pulls his pants and boxers down in one go.
Where the fuck is HR?
All those people in the office are probably like, oh my god, what the fuck?
Not again.
His erection bobbed, hitting his stomach. Wow. It was difficult to reconcile the existence of fairness when Tate Marchetti had been born with an assault rifle for a cock. Jesus. thick, hard, and longer than should be legal. If you keep staring at my cock with your mouth open like that, I'm going to take it as an invitation to enter. My mouth watered. Please do. He said, I'm going to fuck that face.
She lays back on his desk and spreads her legs for him, and he lines himself up and rubs his dick along her clit, but then pulls away and says she can't lose her virginity like this.
He looked like he couldn't believe what he was saying. His dick looked like it couldn't either. So strained. It jerked on its own. I wanted it in me. Needed it. Any way possible. I also knew winning an argument with Tate was a rare feat. But I'm going to fuck your mouth, Charlie.
Knew it.
I curled my fists, mortified that I was negotiating this. Begging for him. My pussy would be a tighter, more pleasurable ride. He arched his brow, as if to say, are we really going there? So would your ass.
Not on the first time. And she's like, fine, fine. Mouth then. And he climbs on top of her, straddling her shoulders, and slides his dick into her mouth. Which is a crazy way to face fuck someone, but sure.
Wait, how is he doing it?
She's laying on his desk, and he straddles her shoulders and just, like, goes at it in her mouth.
Have you ever been face fucked like that?
Probably.
It's not my fave. I'll say that right now.
She tells him not to hold back, and he's like, it'll hurt, and she says she doesn't care.
Good girl. My pussy clenched at his words, hips thrusting up. I wanted him to fill me, devour me, render me unable to walk for days. My tongue swept the underside of his cock with each of his thrusts. He pumped into my mouth, his movements jerky and erratic. I was greedy for him, taking everything he'd give me, begging for more with my eyes. A knock interrupted us. Sylvia's voice invaded the room. Dr. Marchetti, your 3 o'clock is here. Coming, he grunted back, jerking out of me, and well, he sure was. Wait. I reached for his hip. I want to know what it tastes like. I licked my lips. I've never... He groaned, stroking his length from base to tip. I opened my mouth wide. He pumped his cock in front of me, jerking himself off with his crown pressed against my tongue. Thick white ropes shot out of him, landing on my lips, tongue, teeth. He palmed the back of my head, guiding me forward. My lips wrapped around the tip of his cock to accept the rest. He filled my mouth, tasting earthy and warm. Ew.
Dirt.
I swallowed, unable to get enough of him.
Earthy.
Earthy.
Yum. Dirt, leaves.
Yummy. Delicious.
Who doesn't want that?
She blurts out that she loves him, and he pulls away immediately and says she doesn't even know him, and if she did, she wouldn't be saying anything like that. And she's like, no, I love you, Tate, and you love me too, I think. I'll give it 1 year, and you'll be saying it back to me.
1 year?
1 year. She says, I'll wait. That night, she's finishing up Darling Venom with Terry, and she starts to ask him about his plagiarism. He tells her he found the manuscript when he was drunk and high out of his mind and sent it to his manager. When he sobered up, he realized it wasn't his, but it was too late. He edited it so heavily that the original author couldn't even convince himself that Terry stole his work. So he gaslit the shit out of this original author and made them think that Terry wrote that.
Holy fuck.
That's how he got away with it.
Okay. Then Charlotte asks Terry not to tell Tate that they finished the book, so she still has an excuse to keep coming over. Terry says he will, as long as she promises not to credit him for Darling Venom, which is surprising for her to hear, but she says okay. Because, like, he is a plagiarist, but he doesn't want any credit for this book that they think is going to be this huge hit. And she's like, wow, okay, character development.
He's growing.
She tells him she couldn't have finished Darling Venom without him, and it's a perfect book. She forces him to say out loud that he's not a fraud, and then forces him to keep repeating it over and over again until he just starts crying, saying it on his own. And it just reminded me of Good Will Hunting, when he's like, it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Oh, yeah.
And then they both smile at each other. Later on, Tate and Charlotte are sitting at the playground together, talking about Kellen and Darling Venom, and Tate confesses that he had a voicemail from Kellen that he's never listened to. She tells him if he won't listen to the voicemail, he needs to read the book because it'll help him understand Kellen's mindset. He asks her why she was on the roof the night she met Kellen, and her silence is enough. He tells her he's so glad she's here and breathing, and that the world is better with her in it. He leans down and kisses her, and it gets hot and heavy when Charlotte gets a text from Leah asking where she is, and she's giddy because that means Leah checked up on her, and she texts back saying she'll be home in 10. Because Leah generally doesn't give a fuck about her, so the fact that she's wondering where she is, she's like, oh my god, my sister.
Sweet.
Tate walks her home and gives her a kiss at the front door, and she tells him she loves him again. The next day, Tate is on his way home, and he sees all these billboards for Darling Venom, so it's gonna be this huge deal when it releases.
Holy shit.
He gets to his house as Terry is leaving for a few days, and he's gonna be all alone with Charlotte. as Terry is heading out, they get into this stupid little spat, and Charlotte is like, make up with your dad. Life is too short, and Tate says he'll think about it. And then she tells him she loves him again. So she just keeps saying it, and he's like, okay. They go to bed that night and start getting frisky, and Tate wants to play a game where he pulls her dress up and forces her to bite down on the hem. He'll ask her questions, and she can either nod or shake her head, but she cannot let go of the hem.
Would you like me to pinch your nipple or your clit? Nod for nipple, shake for clit. She shook her head. I reached forward, slid her thong to the side, and dove past her lips, pinching the slick bud. The fabric in her mouth muffled her moans. Would you like me to watch you get yourself off, or would you like to watch me jerk off? Charlie shook her head, then nodded. I forced back a laugh. Don't be greedy. Nod for you, shake for me. She nodded, and fuck, I was so down for this. My cock pulsed like it had a heart of its own. It pressed against her ass. She wiggled against it, looking pleased with herself. She repositioned herself so she was closer, on my abs this time, giving me a better view. Her fingers went to her slit, disappearing into the folds. Fuck me. She was so wet. I felt her all over my stomach. Her fingertips grazed her clit. She rocked on top of me, chasing a high I wanted to join. Her legs tightened against my sides as she rubbed furiously, moaning into the hem of her dress.
Mm-mm. He undoes her dress and lets her let go of the hem before sliding it completely off of her.
Her bra and panties came off next, discarded on the floor across the room. Then her thighs were turned to bracketing my hips, her fingers pumping in and out of her pussy. My dick bobbed against her ass, obliterating the last of my willpower. Charlie, I groaned. She rolled her hips, quaking on top of me. Just the tip, she bargained. And never in the history of planet fucking Earth has it ever been just the tip.
He tells her he doesn't have a condom, and she's like, well, as my doctor, you know I'm clean and on birth control, and he says no fucking way. And she's like, just the tip, and he caves and is like, okay, just the tip. He does, and then loses all his control and flips her over, slamming right into her.
Her walls clamped around me in a vice grip. I'd broken her during my exam, but she was still a virgin and, therefore, so fucking tight. I almost came at first contact like a goddamn teenager.
She comes and he follows after, and she tells him again that she loves him. He knows he loves her too, but he can't bring himself to say it, and she immediately calls an Uber and leaves. He gets in his car as soon as she walks out and drives to her house, beating her Uber there, and says she left her umbrella at his place. She invites him in and they get in the shower with all their clothes on, which was super weird.
Oh, okay.
They undress in the shower and start going at it as he tells himself in his head how much he loves her. The next day, Terry goes to Tate's and shows him his 2-month AA chip, and he's almost impressed with his father. So Terry has been sober for 2 months now, which is huge.
Yeah, good for Terry.
The next day, Charlotte gets the first official copies of Darling Venom. Terry bawls his eyes out when he sees it for the first time, and now she's going to give one to Tate, hoping that he'll read it. She goes to his house and plasters his bedroom walls with posters for the book, and he walks in and catches her, which was such a weird thing to do, because he doesn't want to read the book, so she puts posters all over his room.
She's like, I'm going to force him to go through this trauma.
Yeah.
I know. Like, let him read it on his own time.
Yeah, but she's like, no, you will read this. He walks in and catches her, and they fuck real quick, which was weird also, but, you know, honeymoon phase. He tells her he's not reading it, and they order takeout. They get in an argument when Charlotte says she thinks maybe they should go on a real date in public, and he's like, you're looking at the wrong guy if you want a real relationship. She gets up to walk out of his house, and she's like, you're gonna regret losing me. So this is their breakup.
Ugh.
2 weeks pass, and they don't speak, and Tate is spiraling again. He finally decides to read the book, and he finally gets to a passage where Kellen admits that he loved and admired his big brother. He devours the entire book, finally getting an insight into Kellen's mind and his deep feelings of love for Charlotte. He heads to her house, but runs into Leah instead, who tells him to get his shit together and treat her sister right, because she deserves to be loved the way she gives love, which I thought was rich coming from Leah, but...
Yeah, real rich, Leah.
You just now started being on good terms. Cool it.
Leah tells him that Charlotte is at the playground. He goes there and she's understandably pissed at him, and she tells him rock bottom is one of the best places to build a solid foundation, but it will not be with her. And he's like, my brother loved you. I can't love you. And she tells him not to use his dead brother as an excuse. She tells him he looks like shit and gives him the key to the unopened drawer in Kellen's desk and leaves. So when Terry broke the desk drawers, he left one of them alone, but found the one with the manuscript. script. So one of them is still unopened.
Okay. Okay.
Months pass and they're still not speaking. And Terry convinces Tate that he needs to start moving forward. He looks in the drawer and finds a framed picture of him and Kellen and two pennies. So in the locked drawer, Kellen kept a picture of him and Tate.
That's so cute.
He decides to finally listen to the voicemail. It basically tells him to find Charlotte and look out for her. He apologizes for being a shitbag teenager and says he really knows how hard Tate tried with him and that he never hated him. And maybe in the next life, they can actually be brothers.
That's so sad.
Now it's February 14th and Charlotte has just turned 23 and it's been 5 years since Kellen died. Darling Venom has completely sold out on its release day. So February 14th was the release day and it's doing amazing.
Hell yeah.
She goes to the rooftop where she met Kellen and finds Tate there standing on the edge. And he has a carrot cake for her. He tells her happy birthday and finally confesses that he loves her and she saved him from himself. And then they kiss and make up.
Yay!
We're in the epilogue and it's been 3 years. Charlotte is killing it at work. She's very successful. Jonah and Leah are living together and Charlotte basically lives at Tate's, but she technically owns a studio that she doesn't use. She's meeting Tate on the roof and doesn't know why, but when she gets there, he proposes to her.
Oh!
She says yes. A year passes, Charlie's knocked up, and Kellen is being honored for Darling Venom at the Literary Museum of Art. Terry, who is still sober, accepts the award on his behalf and admits to the crowd that he stole the imperfections from Kellen.
Gasp! What? Gasp.
Kellen, as a little boy, wrote that book and he stole it from his own son.
And then gaslit him.
Holy fuck.
Throughout the book, Sue, there was like multiple times where they said that like Kellen and Terry's writings were so similar. Uh-huh. They kind of like foreshadowed it a little bit.
Holy shit. I got it in the very beginning, but I was like, oh, there's no way.
And then he was like, no, Kellen, I wrote it. Crazy. And then Kellen was like, you're right. You're the best author ever. The crowd is too stunned to speak. That's the end.
Well, damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Wild ride.
It was a wild ride.
So, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
3.5.
Okay.
I did enjoy it, but I just can't put my finger on it. There's just something about it that I was like, hmm.
Yeah.
But I did like Tate. I like Tate.
Okay.
And I like Charlotte.
Yeah. Thank you. I guess that answers the question, but do you find Tate sexy?
I do.
Yeah.
Something about him.
We can fix him. We can fix him.
And he knows his way around a vagina. We love that.
Yeah. He knows where that little clitty clit is.
He does. He literally went to school for it. And would you trade places with Charlotte?
No. She's a very sad life.
Yeah.
It's very tragic. No.
All right. So next week, we're telling Riley all about Stepbrother Dearest by Penelope Ward. And we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
Okay. This one doesn't really give me anything. The cover does not. It's just a man, a shirtless man on the cover. He's got some tattoos. I feel like this is going to be a story about a girl who she was living with her mom and her single mom, and her mom got married to this man. And so then she moves in with him, but she's like a young adult also. She's probably like 18, 19, 20, right in there. And so she moves in with them, and then, oh my God, he has a son. And maybe there's some drama between them. They don't like each other at first, but then, oh no, stepbrother, we're fucking.
Oh no, please help me, stepbrother.
Yeah, she starts doing some laundry. She gets stuck in the washing machine.
And he says, I'll help you. I'll fuck you in the dryer.
Okay.
How'd I do?
Annoying. Yeah, whatever, Riley. Well, I guess tune in next week to find out how close Riley was.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten for early access ad-free episodes. And at the second tier, you have access to a podcast of unfortunate events where Riley and I will be doing a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket.
Woo!
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at Smut Up and Listen Podcast and on TikTok at Smut Up and Listen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.